Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
So good
to
see
a white man's game. Woo!
That is the voice of Candace Buckner of the Washington Post, my incredible guest this week. And this, of course, is More Than a White Man's Game, a baseball podcast on the House of L Network. Thank you all for tuning in. And before we get to my interview with Candace, which is fantastic, she's so awesome. I was so happy to have her on this week. But before we get to that, I do have to apologize to you all for getting us off of our regular schedule. We had such a good thing going with every other week. And to be honest, the last couple of weeks, I've just been swamped. For those of you who don't know, I've been covering the Cubs for NBC Sports Chicago for the past couple seasons. And a few weeks ago, really right before, actually, I set up the last podcast, which was an episode focused on the White Sox, is right after that, I found out that they were actually moving me to cover the White Sox. So, funny coincidence there, or I guess not so much of a coincidence because they're playing really well, which is why I wanted to talk about them, and evidently why we're kind of beefing up our coverage team heading into the stretch run and then into the playoffs. So that's been a blast. It's been a whirlwind and also thrown off our schedule here. So thank you for being patient with me. And honestly, the timing might be a blessing in disguise because it just so happens that because of all that, I ended up getting to talk to Candace about her feature on Vida Blue the same week as Major League Baseball on Wednesday is inducting their this year's Hall of Fame class. So in talking to Candace, we touched on themes of who gets in as a Hall of Famer, the process for electing members, all of that. So the timing actually kind of works out well. But again, thank you for your patience. Candace's story on Vida is a part of a larger project that the Washington Post did. It's called The Nine, and it highlights the stories of nine black baseball players through that they picked out through the decades. And Candace and I will get more into that later on in the episode. But it's an incredible project. Definitely check it out. Really cool stuff. And I'm thrilled to have the chance to have Candace on to this podcast because she doesn't always write about baseball. And so this was a unique opportunity for me to get to talk to her on this platform because I just look up to her so much. Her and I met when I was covering the Thunder and she was still on the Wizards beat, which she did for years and is just so well. She's so thorough, such a great writer, such a great reporter, and someone who was really larger than life to me when I met her, and she just made me feel so welcome covering basketball, you know, coming on to a pretty competitive beat in terms of the NBA beats. And she was just so wonderful. And I'm so lucky to have met her in that setting and then have the chance to talk to her here on this podcast as well. She is now in this really cool role for the Washington Post where she's focusing on kind of the intersection of race, gender, diversity issues in sports, and she just does such incredible work, and this is such a great position for her. I love reading her Wizard stuff. I love reading her stuff now. Definitely read as much Candace Buchner as you possibly can. Your life will be better for it, I promise. So we'll get right into it and bring in Candace. Candace, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Of course. I'm so thrilled to talk to you today because I loved The Nine, the whole project that you guys did at the Washington Post, and especially your story on Vida Blue. And I guess I just want to start there with how the idea for the project came up and how you all decided who to include, which players to include in that.
Well, if I remember correctly, and I'm pretty sure I do remember correctly, our one of our enterprise writers, Dave Shinen, who has a background in baseball, came up with the idea to profile or to examine African-Americans, the African-American experience in baseball through nine players. And they were all different ages, starting with a player in his 90s, which of course would be Willie Mays, all living players at the time, 90s, someone who was in their 80s, someone who was in their 70s, 60s, and so on, all the way down to a teenager. And I picked the player who was in his 70s because Dave is very well versed in baseball. And he kind of gave us like a, so maybe you want to talk to, you know, this player or that player. But I just thought Vida Blue story was just the most impressive of all the players in the 70s. I'm from the Midwest. I hadn't personally heard of him before. It was a little before my time, before I came of age as a baseball fan in St. Louis. But I do remember in the 80s, there was, you know, this in 1980s, there was this, you know, drug scandal, and so prevalent that the Pittsburgh Pirates mascot got implicated as someone who was dealing supplying drugs to players. It was prevalent. It was out there. But in researching Vida Blue, and that's part of his story, researching Vida Blue, it was, it came to realize that a lot of the players who were implicated, a lot of the players were players of color. There were a few white players, most notably like Yogi Berra's son, who was like a, you know, kind of like a rotation, like a backup catcher. But that's like the most notable name. So I was interested in telling his story and just finding out a little bit more about him. And considering that even in the 60s, as a young black male, young black player, he went up against his owner for fair wage. That was another aspect that was just very interesting about his story. Just some things I didn't know about him. And when I got to like really dive into his story, I came away with an appreciation.
Well, and then you went out to suburban Oakland to meet with him, right?
Yeah.
What was that like?
I think that made the story. And when I first approached him, he had just gotten vaccinated, but he was really, you know, taking it easy and not trying to go and like live his best life just because he had the vaccination. So he was pretty weary about, you know, going out, and, you know, he could get tickets to the Giants and he could get tickets to the A's because he played for those teams anytime he wanted to, but did he really want to go out? And so it actually took months. He has a girlfriend in Scottsdale. So he would go to Scottsdale a little often because she was recovering from COVID and needed some assistance. But it did take some, I'm vaccinated too, Mr. Blue, would love to come just spend some time and do whatever you do.
I'll keep my distance.
And I didn't say it like that in a sing-songy way, but you know, it was hoping to just convince them, you know, that I wanted to see his life. And I just think as a former beat reporter who was traveling a lot, and I think any reporter will say it, to have access to somebody is very pivotal for our job. So this was the first time that I was able to travel for a story after he was like, yeah, you can come on out, coming out to Concord, California. And you see he always played himself down. Like, you see a day in my life. It's nothing, but whatever. I thought it was crucial for me to get that. He was good in interviews. We talked on the phone a couple of times, but he was, I would say anybody will open up when you're, you know, sharing a meal with them or being on their home turf. And so I thought that was the most crucial part of this, of the whole reporting, which is to be able to see him and sit down and talk face to face.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think you learned about him from that experience that you wouldn't have over, you know, Zoom and phone calls and all of that?
Yeah, I really started to understand once I was kind of in his orbit. Very open, transparent. There's a lot of things that, like, I don't know if I need to know that, but thanks for letting me know, Mr. Ballou. Very transparent, very charming. But when it came to the drug thing, he had a very charming way of giving like a little stock answer, which I'm sure he has given for years.
Sure.
And kind of just walking away from it, easing out of it, just very charming way. And I guess I didn't pick up on that so much during our phone conversation, but it is something that was embarrassing to him. Something that, and here's the other thing, just personally, I feel for people in the public eye who may have made a mistake. Mm-hmm. And for the rest of their lives, every time they get written about, or every time they get, you know, like a big, their obituary will have like that line. And I don't think, you know, the mistake should be like the first line in someone's obituary for their life. In Vida Blue's case, he doesn't mind talking about it when you press him, but it's not something that he's particularly proud of. But he's proud of how he has rehabbed his name and come back after the cocaine scandal. And he did have to spend 3 months in a federal prison in Texas because of those charges. So this was, you know, really a lifetime ago. And maybe it's something that's not top of mind for him. But in this series, when we want to describe and really examine the African-American experience in baseball through the lens of living players. Now, one player, Mudcat Grant, he passed away during this process. He was so profiled. We really wanted to, you know, give the raw and the real. And in this case, his story was very important to describe how African American players were, you know, just not treated equitably in this scandal.
Well, what I love about the way that you set this story up is you draw out the description of him signing this two-sided photo, and those two sides kind of become two different storylines, chapters in his career. So I want to start with the first side, which is where you say, you know, he's a young firecracker and taking on his white owner with this contract dispute. what stood out the most to you about that chapter of his career and this story?
Just how important he was to baseball. Again, I didn't know. I was born in the 80s, and when he really took the baseball world by storm, I think he came into the league in the 69, but really took the league by storm in the 70s. So he was a bona fide celebrity. He does not bring up everything about his past that I thought would be like, wow, this is crazy. I had no clue that he was in a black exploitation film with Jim Brown. And he was so much the it guy of the time that his name was on the movie poster, even though he had like a very crappy role. They put his name on the movie posters, like Jim Brown with Vida Blue in whatever crap title it was. But he was in a major motion film, and in the 70s, black exploitation movies were popular. He met the president. The A's did not win the World Series and the team was invited to the White House. No. President Richard Nixon invited the A's to the White House, particularly because he was a baseball fan, but he wanted to meet Vida Blue, a guy who was essentially, it wasn't his rookie year because his rookie year started late in the 1970 season, but he's essentially in like his first year of major league pitching, and he's just taken the sport by storm. He's on the cover of Time. On the cover of Sports Illustrated, on the cover of Sport. I think he did some game shows back, like during the offseason, go down to LA and appear in like, I think it was a Mike Douglas game show, but it's like, guy was a celebrity. He was a freaking big deal in Major League Baseball. And he was just, you know, this left-handed pitcher who was lights out, and then all of a sudden he had that otherworldly season, and then was perturbed about his money, tried to get his money, and the contract negotiation, all that off season, like really impacted him. And it not just impacted him the next season when the A's did win the World Series, but for the rest of his career because he's really thinking of a very straightforward and somewhat naive perspective of, you have all this money, I'm bringing you all this money. Another fact I didn't put in here, like just when he pitched, stadium sold out, mm-hmm. just because he was on the mound. And that's just not at the Oakland A's stadium. That was on the road. When people knew that he was pitching, they flooded the stadiums. So I'm generating you all this good press, I'm generating you all this money, but you don't want to share it. Very straightforward, very common sense approach, but naive when dealing with that particular owner, and naive in the landscape of a time when there was no such thing as like player empowerment.
Right. I feel like when we talk about contract disputes now, it's a high number versus a higher number. So I want to make clear here, you write in your story that his salary was so low that, you know, that breakout year that he qualified to live in publicly subsidized housing. So we're not talking about, you know,
right.
haggling over massive contracts to slightly more massive contracts. Like, this is a massive lifestyle question.
Generational wealth and all that. And that another point I put in there, Sandy Koufax and Don Dreyer, 6 years earlier, in the 60s, did the same thing. They held out for more money. And they got paid very well. And obviously Sandy Koufax, best pitcher of his era. So 6 years later, Vida's essentially asking for, I forgot the number, but it was less than that. The market had gone up, obviously. The dollar is stronger, but 6 years later, he's asking for something that would be a little bit more fair for his wage. And it's still less than what Cindy Koufax and Don Dreyer had asked. Drysdale, oh my gosh. I am revealing myself as quite the baseball scholar, Don Drysdale. So yeah, still didn't get it.
Yeah.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Then, so we'll flip to the other side of the photo, right, where you're talking about he's older. I'll just read this from your story. He's the guy who served 3 months in prison during a cocaine scandal, collateral damage of a sports drug war that, like the country's drug war, disproportionately, we're in a great role here, you and I, affected Black and Latino men, which you mentioned earlier on, but you talk about his introduction into cocaine, and I feel like that kind of alludes to how prevalent it is, as you're talking about with the mascot. How is he looking at this now, knowing how, you know, he kind of was a sort of scapegoat in all of this?
I think he is not... The thing about it, when talking with Vida Blue, he like always took responsibility, but also in the context of he was never trying to blame it on anybody else. He did have a difficult childhood in that, you know, growing up poor, losing his father at a young age, and then having to make a decision to skip college, but, you know, take your pro contract because, you know, you had to take care of your younger siblings and your mom. You have to be the breadwinner. And we hear those stories a lot about, you know, just the human toll that takes on a young person who are taking their first steps into adulthood. You know, I just think just because we hear that story a lot, it doesn't mean that it's not challenging, and it's not, it impacts you for the rest of your life. Especially there were some things that early on that it, although his father was very loving, very caring, maybe introduced him to alcohol at a young age that has played into his life, that has played into his life for a very long time now. Mm-hmm. So I say all that to say he did have a challenging background and was probably ripe for trying to ease his troubles any way he knew how. Some of it came through substance abuse. However, he takes a lot of responsibility. He takes the responsibility, and he doesn't blame Major League Baseball. Mm-hmm. There are some people that I talked to that did say, you know what, we were the fall guys, and I could name names right now. There's a code. I would say that there is a code with these baseball players, because some of these people who are household names and are in the Hall of Fame have skated and gotten away because they haven't been outed by the other guys, mm-hmm. which is fascinating to me. I don't know if I have that sort of patience and grace.
Be pointing fingers all over the place, like, oh, okay, I'm going
what
to
about that guy.
Yeah, we saw that with PEDs some too. I think probably to less of a effect, but Yeah, it's definitely a baseball culture thing.
Interesting.
To say the least.
That's all I'll say.
Another thing that you talked to Vida a lot about was the Hall of Fame, as you just mentioned, and how he still really wants to get in and seems like hasn't completely given up hope. What do you think? I mean, where is he standing right now on that? And what do you think the chances are?
Yeah, so he believes that with the, it's not in front of me, but essentially it's the old timers panel. It's a panel made up of former players. That's his only chance to get in, because he's off the ballot of the professional baseball writers.
Yeah, so the eras committee, I believe.
There you go. Yeah. So he thinks that through his peers, they will see his impact. They can see, they will see his numbers. And there were some bad years thrown in there, and he doesn't have like a certain amount of like a threshold of wins. However, like his teammate, they were starting pitchers together in the A's. He has Catfish Hunter has, I believe, in the low twos. I for some reason, the number 209 is on my mind, so maybe that's Vida's number. But Catfish Hunter may have like 218 or something along those lines. And you would think that with those numbers, 200 wins, low 200s, that's not Hall of Fame numbers. However, Catfish is in the Hall of Fame. We're like, well, he has all these World Series. He pitched in, he's pitching a World Series. He has 5 rings, blah, blah, blah. He's a Hall of Fame pitcher. Well, Vida has 3 rings. And Vida was just like, he was like an asteroid that hit Earth when he pitched that one season. And I personally think that what he did that year was worthy for consideration of more. Maybe not, you can't say a Hall of Fame career out of one season. However, if you can look at his numbers and look at his strikeouts, he was a batting up pitcher. I see. If I was in front of the Eras committee, they would say, "Get this lady out of here." Just gonna say he's a pretty good pitcher and make that quote. But those men who know the game, those men on the Eras committee, I should say, who know the game and know what it was like to hit against him, to play with him. He's hoping that they do the right thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean,
Yeah. I feel like every year we have another conversation about the character clause, as you know, as the writers generally are voting in guys to the
Hall of Fame. Do you think now, like if Vida Blue was entering the ballot now, do you think he did drugs, do you think that would be such a big
I would hope
thing
not
now,
especially because it seems like we're coming down less hard on people who did PEDs, which that's cheating, and doing cocaine is not. I mean, it's a banned substance, whatever, but that's not performance enhancing. And I feel like as the voters continue to, as we move on to a new era of voters, because the character clause is so inconsistent, right? It's all up to whoever's voting. And as you said, we have plenty of people in the Hall of Fame who are, you know, might violate that character clause for one reason or another, whether they're like absolutely known racists who have been very open about those opinions or whatever it may be. And now that gambling is very much a part of the sports atmosphere.
Right.
I just don't know how. I'm glad that I have several more years until I'm a voter, because I don't think we can treat the character clause the way that we have in the past, because it's just not consistent.
Right. And what do you want to police? What behavior do you want to police and say, no, no, that's bad? And what behavior do you say, well, you know, that's okay.
Right. Exactly. And at what point does it become just like, oh yeah, well, I liked that guy. We definitely have. I mean, I'm not accusing any voters of specifically doing that, but we all have our own biases.
And for sure. For sure.
You cover the guy and he was good to you. That might.
Yamahimi should go to the Hall of Fame in that case. He was such a good guy. I come from a NBA background. So I covered basketball basically throughout throughout the meat of my career. The good guy in the locker room, you know, you do because you want to be treated like a human. You don't want to be treated like the enemy. You don't want to be treated like the quote media. And if someone actually talks to you like you're a human, like it's like, hey, I can talk to you back like you're a human. Mm-hmm. And we can have a good working relationship. It's human nature.
Yeah. Yeah. And you then come, all of your writing comes from a more informed place about who this person is, as opposed to like what stock answers he's going to give you.
Right.
All right. Anything else that I should have asked you on this that we haven't touched on?
No, I need to figure out what the Eras Committee is meeting next, because I'm not going to obviously try to show up, but I definitely am curious to see if there's any new momentum with, you know, maybe listening or examining Vida Blue a little bit more. So that's what I would be interested to know.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you so much, Candace. I really appreciate the time.
Thanks for having me. All right.
So good to see you.
It's a white man's game. Woo!
That was the one and only Candace Buckner. I just feel so fortunate to have had her on, to have her take the time to really dive into a story that is so important and that she told so well. Obviously, check out that. Read the whole thing. It's got so many layers, and she's so good at drawing out details and scene setting. Just really wonderful read. If you haven't read it yet, go check that out now. On the Eras Committees, I looked it up after Candace and I jumped off Zoom, and they meet during the winter meetings, but it's a little complicated figuring out exactly when which committee is going to meet, because there's a whole cycle of elections, and the era that you played in determines the year that specific committee will meet. So, long story short, as far as I can tell, Vida Blue is considered to be in the modern baseball era, which they outline as 1970 to 1987, which means that the next schedule for that era should the induction, or sorry, the election looks like it's scheduled for December of 2023 for the class of 24. So still a little ways off, but wanted to find the actual timing on that for all of you. Like I said, check out Candace's story. Check out everything that you can that she's written. Wonderful writer. Wonderful person. So lucky to know her. And also check out the other 8 stories on the Washington Post in that project, the 9. So there's a lot, they touch on a lot within that project and a lot of different themes. Highly recommend it. Time well spent. So as you guys all hop off of this podcast to go read that, I do want to thank you for tuning in to this episode. And again, thanks for your patience as our schedule's gotten shifted around here. Please spread the word about this to your friends, family, pets, neighbors, Of course, a huge thank you to Lawrence Holmes, our producer and the man who started this all, who started House of L and continues to churn out great stuff and bring in great people to do other shows within the network. So shout out to Lawrence Holmes, and we will see you all next time.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.